I'd like to call to order the June 27th meeting of the Oak Ridge Board of Education. Would ask you to please stand and join me as we honor America and pledge allegiance to the flag.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, and you may be seated. Next item on the agenda is the approval of the agenda. I would note that after a resignation has been submitted, under items for action, item A is no longer an item or no longer needed on the agenda. So I would entertain a motion to approve the agenda.
So move.
Second.
Motion made by Mr. Eby, seconded by Ms. Eagle. Any other discussion? All those in favor of approving the agenda signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries unanimously. Next item on the agenda is the public forum. The public forum is for anyone in the audience who would like to address the board at this time on a topic that is not on the agenda. The board may have questions to ask or may direct your questions to the superintendent and ask the superintendent to get back with you to the answers after he has an opportunity to confer with staff. If you wish to address the board at this time, you will have 3 minutes to speak and approach the podium, sign your name, and then state your name and address for the board. Is there anyone who would like to address the board at this time? Seeing no one, we'll move on to the consent agenda. Do I hear a motion?
Move to approve.
Second.
Motion made by Ms. Marshall, seconded by Ms. McLean. Discussion. All those in favor of approving the consent agenda signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries unanimously. Next, under items for action, item B, formal approval of emergency purchase approval of bid for G building renovation. Dr. Borchers.
Mr. Chairman, I recommend approval of the bid from Danco Construction of Knoxville, Tennessee for G building renovation in the amount of $121,400.
For the superintendent's recommendation, do I hear a motion?
Move for approval.
Second.
Motion made by Mr. Eby, seconded by Ms. McLean. Dr. Borchers.
We're bringing this back just as a formality to make sure the board's aware we can formally pass this tonight. But as you recall, this was an emergency because our original bid came in higher than expected. And given the short summer we have prior to the start of the school year, we needed to get a little bit lower bid and start that construction. And if you've been back behind the G building, you'll see that there's been a lot of work that's already been started.
Comments or questions from the board? Hearing none.
I do have one question. How many students do we now have signed up, or what's?
I believe our inaugural class was going to be, we were looking for at least 20. Mm-hmm. So we're hoping that that will happen, and I believe, and we just met with TCAT Knoxville today actually on this, that this program is going to grow, and they have envisions for making this quite the hub for Volk Auto in the G building.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yep. I think it's going to be great. Thank you.
Motion on the floor is a formal approval of emergency purchase, approval of bid for G building renovation. All those in favor, this motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries unanimously. Next, item C, Carl Perkins basic funding application for FY16. Dr. Borchers.
I recommend approval of the attached Carl Perkins basic funding application for FY17. 17.
Did I say 16? Sorry, 17. You've heard the superintendent's recommendation. Do I hear a motion?
Move to approve.
Second.
Motion made by Ms. Marshall, seconded by Ms. McClain. Dr. Borchers.
As the board knows, this is an annual thing that we do, and I talked with Ms. Cross today. By the way, she can't be here because she was invited to speak at a conference in Orlando about the great success that we've had with our Microsoft certifications with our students. So we're getting a lot of great recognition for what she's been doing in that area. But as I mentioned, I did review her budget, which is attached, and I didn't have any other questions for her after she explained it to me.
Comments or questions? Hearing none, the motion on the floor is approval of the Carl Perkins basic funding application for FY17. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries unanimously. Next item on the agenda is the 2016-2017 Head Start contract with Anderson County Schools. Dr. Borchers.
Mr. Chairman, I recommend approval of the 16-17 Head Start contract between Anderson County Schools Head Start and Oak Ridge Schools Preschool Head Start.
Per the superintendent's recommendation, do I hear a motion?
Move for approval.
Second.
Motion made by Ms. Eagle, seconded by Ms. McClain. Dr. Borchers.
Again, this is an annual piece that we do with Anderson County. Mr. Philauer and Mr. Lay and myself met with Anderson County. Larry Foster, superintendent. He has a short time up there. He didn't mention that at all when we talked. And Ms. Shelby Hahn. And it was a great meeting, great conversation. And I think all of us felt moving forward, we have a great framework as we move forward.
Comments or questions? Ms. Eagle.
Yes, we actually worked in a very cooperative manner in any language in the contract that was based on probation. That language is gone. Those requirements are gone. We're just basically back to the standard rules and regulations to run a Head Start program.
Mr. Lay, just because it might be a question, do you want to talk about the great news we had about inclusion as well?
Yes. That was perhaps our longest discussion, working towards having the ability, the permission to have a totally inclusive program, so we can now spread students throughout multiple classrooms in our program. And you know, that just helps us basically take students sometimes who are high risk, high need, and basically spread those out throughout the program to where it'd just be a better program for us, so meet their needs better.
And I would just like to add, having come from some difficult situations previously, I told Dr. Borchers and Mr. Lay as we were leaving, that probably was the most congenial, productive meeting for a very short period of time. But because it was that, the credit goes to both Dr. Borchers and Mr. Lay for your work and pulling this together, getting us where we need to be, and getting the opportunities for our preschool, as you just pointed out, to do some things that are going to make this program stronger. So thank you. Mr. Eby.
With the inclusion, will that allow us a little more flexibility on how the funds are distributed across the board? Are they still restricted within certain classrooms?
Basically, what that will do for us is by becoming inclusive, any classroom that has as many as one Head Start identified student in it, we will have to follow all the rules and regulations. So that will allow us to use, you know, total funding for additional classrooms more so than we have in the past. At the same time, the rules and regulations are they're fairly cut and dry, so we don't have a lot of ability for movement there, but once again, we will be able to spread those funds into more classrooms.
Great. Thank you.
And I would add to that what Key said too. I would just have to say, just brag on really Shelby Hahn. She has been wonderful to work with. And like I said, we are definitely moving in the right direction, and we're just doing what's best for students.
Ms. McClain.
With all this talk about the preschool, I was just wondering, where are we in the building process.
I'm pausing. I to answer that. With the city manager and I not being able to meet the last few weeks, I haven't been able to get up to speed with that. But I know there's been some conversations with it's time to accelerate what we're doing now and to make sure this process moves forward. As you recall, in the city council budget, they have some money there. They were talking about an RFP to go out and get some engineering done for multiple projects, the preschool being one of them. So I anticipate that discussion is going to increase and we're going to see some movement there. But every conversation I've been in has been positive about moving forward. So I still feel comfortable about that. I think the budget at the end of the school year and the city's budget probably slowed that down. But I see some good things in the future that indicate that this is going to happen.
But the Head Start, they're still banking on us building a new building? That's
we continue to have that conversation, and you know, going back to what Mr. Lay says about the inclusion is a good piece, but that also means every classroom has to meet those Head Start regulations, and we're going to continue to work with Ms. Hahn to make sure that Atlanta and those folks know that hey, we intend to have a new building here very soon, so that as they're doing those inspections, they keep that in mind.
And I will add to that, we already have an understanding that if there is a requirement that is put upon us and it has really a high cost, they understand once we have approval of a new preschool building, if that is in place, they're going to be very understanding. We will document that we will only be in this building a certain amount of time, and they've already communicated they are willing to back off on a few issues if the cost is not reasonable for such a short period of time. So.
Are there questions or comments? Motion on the floor is approval of the 2016-17 Head Start contract with Anderson County Schools. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries unanimously. Next item on the agenda, item E, Tennessee Department of Education 2016-17 Differentiated Pay Plan.
Mr. Chairman, I recommend approval of the Tennessee Department of Education 2016-17 Differentiated Pay Plan Report.
For the superintendent's recommendation, do I hear a motion?
Move for approval.
Second.
Motion made by Ms. Eagle, seconded by Ms. Marshall. Dr. Borchers.
Yeah, I want Bruce to share what his thoughts, because he's had a great year working with this team. But I will say that, I think we're entering year three now with this program and just really have some incredible teacher leaders that are in these positions. And I think we're really starting to see some great results and relationships that they're building with their own staffs. I know our board, as you go out and make visits, you've seen some of these people in action. So just feel real good about where our program is heading. But Bruce, to add some comments?
Yes, I'll go on record as a former principal. This is the best thing we ever did for our buildings. We basically have taken those educators who are leaders. We've given them the opportunity to demonstrate their skills as a leader. It is making a positive difference in our buildings. Also, a team of four of us actually went and participated at the state level. And we were actually a year late going to this meeting. This professional development activity was actually for schools that were going that direction. We already had a year behind us, but it was very clear that the program we have in place is a quality program. It is tremendous use of the funds. It's making a difference for our students. The best part would be the staff buy-in. If you will read the reviews, we actually did surveys about the effectiveness of the program. There are some just extremely positive comments. The teachers realize the importance of the program and once again how it's allowing them the support they need to be more effective in the classroom. So in our plan we have submitted is basically a plan identical to what we submitted last year. We're just going into year three with a quality program.
Mr. Eby.
You just answered my question, was how much change is there? But the other thing is, I remember when we first implemented this, there was a lot of people who had a lot of concerns about how it could be done. There were different ways you could implement it, and I think this shows that the way that the Oak Ridge Schools came up with this approach for the differentiated pay plan shows that it, is the benefit that we expected that it could be. So thank you.
Yeah. And thank you for the comments. And I would tell you, we're not satisfied at this point. Like I said, we basically, we surveyed the entire staff system-wide. And like I said, most of the comments were very favorable, but there were some comments. Once again, very appropriate things we can do and we can do better. We've had a very low change in personnel that will be our teacher leaders for next year, but we have had some change. And once again, we're putting the right people in the right positions, once again, to do what's best for students.
Ms. Engel.
Have we seen any trends about changes in difficulty hiring teachers for specific areas where down the road we might need to add in filling difficult positions as part of this plan, or are we still able to fill our vacancies with the quality of educators we're looking for?
Overall, the applicant pool is still sufficient for us to hire quality staff to fill positions. I've had a few conversations, I don't really have data to support this, but just basically some conversations with some principals in some areas. In one area that I would mention, high school mathematics, we have not had an overabundance of what we would consider highly qualified math teachers, and we have multiple positions for math teachers at the high school level. So we're seeing some areas, and I'll still go on record saying part of that is due to the evaluation system. It's tougher to become a tenured teacher in a school system than it was prior to the new evaluation system. And it does appear that is, you know, creating a situation where some teachers are slower to jump ship, and, you know, and our difference in pay is not what it was at one time. So I think we're seeing that in some cases it's getting more difficult to attract. I will say, after meeting with educators in administration from other systems, basically like in the Gallatin experience, some systems are having a tough time. So we're in much better shape than the average school system.
Anyone else? Thank you. The motion on the floor is approval of the Tennessee Department of Education 2016-17 differentiated pay plan. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion carries unanimously. Next item on the agenda is the purchase of excess Oak Ridge student device cases. Dr. Borchers.
Mr. Chairman, I recommend the approval of Access Oak Ridge student device cases from PCS Incorporated at a total cost of $39,064. This will provide an upgraded case for all Access Oak Ridge devices in phase one.
I've heard the superintendent's recommendation. Do I hear a motion?
Move to approve.
Second.
Motion made by Ms. McLean, seconded by Mr. Eby. Dr. Borchers.
I know the board's aware of the case discussion that we've had, and like any good organization, we always see where we can improve, and we think these cases will be an upgrade to the case that we had last year that contains our devices. And I think you've seen a version of this, but actually you can lock the device inside this case, so you can just, it never has to come out of the case, if that would, on maybe if you wanted to flip it around and write on it, but for the majority you could leave the device right in the case, and we're hopeful that this will help us down the road here as far as accidental breakage or a slip off a desk.
Questions? Mr. Eby.
I have to ask Mr. Kofer, so $25 a case, have you done a cost-benefit analysis on this? And for the $39,000, how much do you think this is going to save us in the future?
As far as cost analysis, I do know that it's going to help us keep the machines, you know, less breakage rate, unknown since it's not tested. But I do know that it's going to keep the machines in the kids' hands more often. It's going to decrease the time that they're going to be without or a loaner. So that was the biggest target we was hitting.
That's a good point. That's a lot of times people don't take that into the cost factor, but, you know, taking it out of their hands for education is worth the whole thing. Thanks.
Before he goes, any other questions for Doug? Thank you. Any other comments or questions? Motion on the floor is a purchase of excess Oak Ridge student device cases. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries unanimously. Next item on the agenda is the purchase printers from Thermocopy Lease. Dr. Borgers.
Mr. Chairman, I recommend the approval to purchase the printers obtained from a Thermocopy lease signed in 2011 in the amount of $45,525.94. This amount represents fair and market value.
For the superintendent's recommendation, do I hear a motion?
Move to approve.
Second.
Motion made by Ms. McLean, seconded by Ms. Eagle. Dr. Borsch.
Recently, members of the business office, technology office, myself, came to the conclusion that this was the best option at this point to purchase the equipment at fair market value rather than jump back into a lease for all of these printers. There are some main large copiers that we think it's still worth doing a lease for, but at this point in time, we just finished the last item with Access Oak Ridge. We wanted time to evaluate the number of printers we might need, so 5 years from now might look a lot different than it does right now. So we think by not entering into a lease, purchasing these printers at market value is a better choice because it buys us some time to really take a hard look at the number of printers that we think we're going to need in the future.
Questions? Motion on the floor is the purchase of printers from Thermocopy Lease. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries unanimously. Next item on the agenda is the food service contract. Dr. Borsers.
Mr. Chairman, I recommend approval of the food service contract with Aramark Educational Services Incorporated for fiscal year 2017.
You've heard the superintendent's recommendation. Do I hear a motion?
Move for approval.
Second.
Motion made by Mr. Eby, seconded by Ms. McLean. Dr. Borchers.
Yeah, you can see the contract renewal attached and all the information about the changes in that contract. But Karen can speak to more of that, and Jen is also here from Aramark if there's specific questions.
Comments? Question?
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, at this year's NSBA meeting, Aramark had a booth, and they were promoting very hard the fact that they've got farm to table. They're bringing in fresh vegetables, local food. Will that be part of what we get in this contract, or will it still be frozen and reheated?
Because I know we have participated in a fresh fruit and vegetable program from local, so she can speak to it.
Currently, we use Sysco as a vendor for the produce that we do not get from DOD. And we do have a list that gets emailed to us that tells us what is local and what's not. But what we could do a better job of is actually promoting the actual products that are locally grown and advertising that more, doing more of better marketing of those items.
I think that would be very good. Okay. Because it's been a number of years ago now, but we went to one of the TSBA functions at Granger County High School where almost everything they serve in the cafeteria is locally grown and of course prepared on site.
Right.
The quality was outstanding.
Okay.
I mean, it was a place that I would pay to go eat. And if we could bring in more of the locally grown and prepare it in such a manner that it's appealing to the students, it's a win for both of us.
Okay. Thank you.
I would add that over this past year, we didn't get as many as we would like to have had, but Ms. McLean and I did have several opportunities to dine at a couple of our eating facilities. We were at Robertsville one day and at the high school on another day. Got to talk with the cafeteria workers and talked with the students. It was interesting when we were at Robertsville, we were help me if I get turned the wrong way on this. We were talking to the kids about pizza, and I thought this was very interesting. Do you know what shape of pizza the kids like the best? I bet you never thought of this. The regular shape pizza? No. Square pizza. That's their favorite. Now, we never really got a real explanation of that, but they said that they really enjoy the square pizza the best. But we were very impressed. Throughout the history of education and on continuing with the history of education, cafeterias are not like mom's home cooking. They never have been. They never will be. But your suggestion is a good one, by all means. But we were, and I'll let Ms. McLean speak. I won't speak for her, but we've enjoyed the food. Was cooked well. It was hot, particularly at the high school. A lot of opportunities of different types of food. And with the addition of the coffee bar at the high school, that's made a great impact there, I think, not only with students, but staff members there as well. So we thoroughly enjoyed our opportunities. And I would recommend, you hear people talking about this and that, but we just decided to take it upon ourselves to go and find out firsthand. So I would recommend maybe we'll do that in the coming school year to continue that, because we learned a lot, I think, by doing that. And we appreciate your staff and their hard work. They're there doing and working hard, just as our teachers do, to make that an attractive part of our educational program. So we thank you for that.
Thank you very much.
Ms. McLean.
I had the students' favorite dish at Robertsville, the chicken sandwich, and it was good. It wasn't great, but it was good. And then at the high school, I was so impressed with how many choices there are. And for the freshmen and sophomores who have to eat there, there are a lot of different choices. I would love to see a salad bar there at the high school. I think that might attract some of the teachers to the cafeteria.
Okay.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Mr. Eby.
Yeah, I was looking at the numbers here, and so the profit is money that goes back into our funds, is that correct?
Yes, that's correct. Okay.
So over the years, how has that changed? And it's like 1% right now, which is, I think it's amazing that we even have a, we're not subsidizing. I think that's great.
Yes. Several years ago, we were struggling just to, when I first came on board, you were about $250,000 in the hole each year that had to come from instructional side to make ends meet. And over the years, we have worked to not only make ends meet, but actually have a profit afterwards that we could use to replace food service equipment and cafeteria equipment. So that, again, the instructional side doesn't have to come up with that money. So we can give you a history if you'd like that.
Well, I think I see we got two newspapers over here. I just think that's important for people to recognize that, give credit where credit's due, and credit where credit's due here is that, we were costing the schools a substantial amount. I remember that when I was on it before. That was coming right out of instructional, and by going through the food services the way that we do now, is that we've turned this around so it's not costing the education process.
Yeah, and what's also significant is it's been done primarily without increases to the meals for the kids. I think we went for like 7 years without increasing, and then we increased it slightly. So it's not like we just upped the prices to achieve that.
Thank you.
I would just say as an aside for Jen, and she probably knows what I'm going to say, but every year I have I have my PTO council, and Probably another one that Jen loves is our student council, superintendent council. And Jen is more than willing to come there and listens to the suggestions from kids and parents. But I just, you need to know that Jen's very open to that. Even though it might be the exact same question she got the year before, she responds with a smile on her face. So we appreciate her joining those meetings.
Thank you. Other questions or comments? Thank you for your leadership in this program and what you do, and we're glad to have you here in our district.
Thank you very much. Right.
Okay, the motion on the floor is approval of the food service contract. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries unanimously. Next on the agenda are a number of board policy revisions. We have grouped all of those into one arena. We certainly can pull any of those out and deal with them separately if the board feels that is necessary. You would have found that most of these changes are by legislative policy, which doesn't give us leeway to make significant changes. So with that being said, Dr. Borchers, I'll go to you for a recommendation.
Mr. Chairman, I recommend approval of the following TSBA proposed policy revisions: 1.407, 3.202, 3.219, 4.605, 4.7, 4.804, and 6.415.
You've heard the superintendent's recommendation. Do I hear a motion?
Move to approve.
Second.
Motion made by Ms. McClain, seconded by Mr. Eby. And I would be amiss, and Lynn, I guess you sent this out, the synopsis of the, thank you for doing that. That was extremely helpful in going through this process. I appreciate that. Comments or questions on any of these, Ms. Marshall?
Yes, I have questions on several. So on the policy 1.407, and it's the request for inspection of records and request for copies of records. All this makes sense, but I did have a question. It looks like we have the ability to deny those requests. Are there criteria for denying permission to allow someone to review or get copies? So I'm looking down at line 24 under request for inspection and line 9 of page 2. If the request for copies is denied, if the request to inspect is denied, is there a criteria there for denial, or do we have an understanding of for what reason you would deny access?
We should have had Mr. Giordano stay with us. Dr. Lee, do you want to? Dr. Lee was very happy to be named the person that all these requests go to. I just want to go on record with that. But do you want to make any comments there, Dr. Lee?
It would be the state criteria. I'm not aware in our situation, that we have ever denied any requests. Sometimes it takes time to either redact information or to find information.
No, and the policy is pretty clear about for timing. It just felt squishy. Well, it's like the, it was the, like that perhaps we were able to do that, but it didn't make clear what the criteria would be. And so if it's in a state, if it's in a state law or mandate, then I guess that's there somewhere.
I'm guessing that's very true, and perhaps it would be a request that's just not legal, like someone from out of state, and we say, well, thank you, but we're denying that request based on dot dot dot. So, but yeah, I don't remember, Dr. Lee.
And we can certainly ask Mr. Giordano if there's more legal nature to your question.
Okay. All right. Next question is on policy 3.219, which is the unmanned aircraft system drones. Never thought I would look at a policy like that. This is in reference to on our school property, at our school events, et cetera. Do we expect school systems around the state to take on the same policy? And so our folks, when they travel to away games or away events, would be subject to this policy on someone else's property? Yes?
I would assume so, and you all don't know this, but Mr. Lay is a drone specialist. This is kind of his policy that he took under his wing, and really though, yes, but very honestly, I think I'm guessing that when we talked about this at executive committee, we're going to see this again because it's so new. Things are going to happen. The people will push the limits on this. So we really at this point are suggesting we take the TSBA recommendations. We do expect others to do the same, but we highly anticipate we will have changes after changes after changes probably on this policy.
Okay.
Ms. McClain.
I have seen several drones down at the marina when they're having the rowing events, and I would expect maybe at cross-country events or something similar we might have drones.
I think they're going to become more and more prevalent every month, every day, with students, with them getting cheaper and the technology getting better. I think that's probably why we're seeing this recommendation this year.
Ms. Eigel.
And I don't know that I saw the synopsis, but back to 1.407, the open records on the second page, starting at line 11, it says that when the number of requests for copies within a calendar month exceeds 4, that we may charge a fee for labor. Isn't our current policy just that we may charge the fee for labor irrespective of the frequency of requests, particularly because someone might make a very large request that takes tens of hours or hundreds of hours to fulfill? I know that the city's policy as of just a few months ago was still, you know, first request, any request, you will be charged for the labor as well. So is that a change in state law, or is that just us loosening that up?
Good question, but yeah, I think TSBA, all they do is look at the legislation and then provide that framework for us to choose from. I don't think they took liberty and said, you know, do this. I think they just said, here's what the law recommends and here's what we're recommending to the schools.
Well, should we not go back to what we had originally then? Which did give us the right to request that. I think Ms. Eagle's comment, if it's a very large request that's, you know, thousands of pages or something like that, that's only one request. But
Dr. Lee, any thoughts on that? We can still charge for that large request, can we not?
Well, under this new policy, we could charge for the pages, but not for the labor, tens or hundreds of hours it might take
printing
to fulfill it, unless it was the fifth request in a month.
I think we've typically stuck to what the state comptroller's office advises us and tried to be consistent with the state policy. And that's why I think TSBA is suggesting this, and that's what we have typically done in the past.
Yeah, imagine if we're not in line with the comptroller's office, we're not going to be in a good place.
At the Tennessee TSBA Board of Directors meeting, this was could have been a very lengthy discussion because there were a number of people that were not real pleased with the direction that it was going. But as Ben Torres said, this is what the legislative people have done, and this is, you know, what we're recommending that the change be. And that kind of ended our discussion. Mr. Eby.
Going to 3.202 on the AED, any school with an AED shall conduct a CPR and AED drill to ensure students are aware of the steps that must be taken. So if we have an AED at a school, are all students going to take a CPR and AED drill, participate in that?
We're going to be guided by the fire department on exactly what this will look like. This will be the first year that we have this kind of drill. But in general, it involves some kind of role play. So I don't imagine that every student, but they would at least be present to see how this looks. But we'll kind of get clarification as we go with this, as this is a new rule.
Yeah, this is kind of written like you can drive a truck through it, and it's kind of hard for me to understand exactly what it is, so not very
from
specific.
My understanding, what I have heard is that it looks like a scenario in which, you know, you kind of have a mock situation in which you have to run and get the AED and then use it and so forth. And so I think the drill, obviously it's not feasible to have 1,500 kids be a mock person.
But are we expecting that the students would be capable or would utilize the AED, or would the teachers be using the AED and the students just know they're supposed to stay away? Are they supposed to notify the teachers? I mean, I guess that's part of the drill. But I guess my question is, are we expecting that the students, some students, if not all students, would be some kind of trained where they would actually be using the AED?
What we're mostly doing is focusing on getting more and more of our teachers trained. Actually, our coordinator of school health has done a huge survey to figure out how many staff have been trained, where we have staff, like what schools might have fewer people trained, and we're training staff up. So I'm imagining that this drill will be more focused on the adult side of it, but still allowing students to be aware of what an AED is, where it's located, and that kind of thing in case of an emergency. But we don't currently have plans in place to get all of our students CPR and AED certified. What we're really working on right now is getting an increased number of staff CPR and AED certified. So again, this is a new thing, so it probably will get cleared up as we get more directions.
Do we do this in any direction in our wellness classes? Do we know?
I know we've had CPR training offered in some of our classes, and I'm not sure if AED is part of that, but we could get that answer back to you. But I know I've seen our kids taking CPR classes in one of the wellness kids. Yeah.
Yeah, I thought they did. I again, and we had some discussion on this, that there, as you've kind of alluded to, it's kind of an unknown right here what the expectation is. I feel like that the initial expectation is that some communication is given to the students so they know where these devices are located. So in case of an emergency, they at least know where to go or to tell somebody. That was the initial, but who knows? I think at some point in time, it could lead to a requirement that every student in every school know how to do this and how to use them.
I'm not against that requirement, really. I mean, I think it's, as far as being a good citizen, knowing CPR and knowing the Heimlich maneuver are good things as far as citizenship goes. But I do know that for our short-term goal, what we're focusing on is making sure we get more staff CPR and AED certified and then conduct the drills to get our students aware, like you just said. And we will see how that moves through the curriculum with our kiddos. But we definitely need to make sure we have a good amount of staff certified.
Ms. Eagle.
I suspect that the AEDs in the schools are similar to the ones that are present in a lot of churches, and those are set up with very clear instructions and limited use so that anybody, any adult, any high school student could take it off the wall and it's idiot-proof.
Yes, that's my understanding.
I believe some of them talk to you as well. You don't even have to read. They just tell you what to do.
Ms. McLean.
I have been certified with a Boy Scout troop, and it's very basic, and the machine won't let you use it unless it's just right. But I would think it would be realistic for all of our middle school and high school students to go through CPR training and know what the AED device is. I think that would be great. A big goal, but I think that would be a really neat thing.
Other comments or questions on any of these policies? Now, please be aware that if I want you to feel comfortable with these, We don't want to just send them on through. If there's one that you want pulled out and you feel like we need additional information, we certainly can do that.
Yeah, so on 4.804, religious content of courses, just a question to Dr. Borchers and the staff. Do we have confidence that the way this is written, that it's enforceable? It feels very subjective to me. I mean, Mr. Eby a minute ago said it's a policy you could drive a truck through. I don't know that I personally would want to have to enforce this one because it looks awfully subjective. And I think as a board member, I want to make sure that the policies are a tool for you so that you know exactly, so that everybody's clear on parameters. It just feels like there's a lot of subjective language. And if you and your staff have high confidence in the policy, I will trust your judgment. I don't, particularly the way it's written. So I ask the question.
And again, I don't have to remind the board, this bubbled up early in the school year last year. Policies are what they are, and this is probably loose specifically, and our legislators felt that they needed to include this. So this is their language. You'll see the numbers highlighted in the red with going back to statute. But in any case like this, whether the red is here or not, that's going to be an individual conversation with the teacher. So if we would get information that would look like we are breaking policy, we would take that on a case-by-case basis. I'm guessing across the state, this will be a difficult policy to be I don't know how you could write it to make it so it's totally locked and easy to make a case that somebody violated this. I think you're looking at a case-by-case basis.
Other comments or questions?
Finally, a compliment to 6.415. This is pretty awesome. I think it's very clear, and just for those folks out there listening, this is a student suicide prevention policy, but it is almost the antithesis of the other policy. It's very explicit in what's expected of staff, particularly the comment about all district employees shall attend either the annual in-service training or in suicide prevention or participate in other equivalent training. That's pretty powerful because I think all of our staff members, us included, really, as we're around students, you never know when you're going to be in the right place at the right time to make a difference for someone, to be a listening ear, to be the person who happens to be there at a bad moment, or to just point them in the right direction where a child can get child or staff member or whoever can get help. So kudos on this one. And again, the policy is very clear. So happy to see this here.
Others? And then what I would ask at this time is for the motion to approve these on first reading. Then if these are approved on first reading, I would ask if there is any that you want pulled out to come back. If there are none, then we'll go to the next item on the agenda, which is suspending of the second reading on all of these policies. So the motion on the floor is proposed Board of Education policy revisions 1.407, 3.202, 3.219, 4.605, 4.700, 4.804, and 6.415 on first reading. All those in favor of approving on first reading signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries unanimously. Are there any of the policies that we just approved on first reading that any board member would like to remove for future discussion with additional information? Hearing none, then we'll move to the next item, which is to suspend the second reading of the board policies that were just approved on first reading. Do I hear a motion?
Move to approve.
Second.
Motion made by Ms. McClain, seconded by Ms. Eagle. Any discussion? All those in favor of suspending the second reading of those board policies signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Motion carries unanimously. Next, we move to items for information, special education report. Dr. Borchers.
Yeah, Miles will come on up to get his brief presentation hooked up. And I know some board members have asked, Kate, can we hear a little bit about special education? So Miles has put something together for us this evening. And just a shout out to Miles. He's done a wonderful job here. It's hard to believe it's only been here 1 year. But he's incredibly visible around the district and very willing to help out. And he'll highlight this, but I'll preempt it. He's done a great job starting a parent organization group that talks about special ed and gifted, and I'll let him talk more about that, but kudos to him for reaching out and creating that type of communication structure. So, Miles, I'll turn it over to you.
Thank you for those kind words, and thank you for the opportunity to share tonight. After all that food talk, I'll shorten my speech by 2 minutes so that I've got just a brief presentation just to share some things about special education. Again, thank you on behalf of my staff, my certified, my classified, all my service providers, whether on staff or contracted, all the students and all the parents, you know, thank you for the opportunity to be able to do this in Oak Ridge Schools. And we have some phenomenal things going on. But first, I wanted to share with you our population. And these are our current numbers that we served in the 2015 and 16 school year. What you will see are numbers that are just under 1,997 students we served this year on an IEP. So the staff worked tremendously hard, and I'm here on behalf of them to be able to share the great things that they do each and every day. I get to spend time in classrooms and in schools, talking with parents and out in the community to hear all the great things that our teachers are doing inside the classroom. With that, you can see that we've done quite a bit of work with our population. There's still lots of work to be done because every day is a new challenge. Every day brings a new student who is unique to our district, and we look forward to tackling those and working with those students. It's not always a tackling job. A lot of it is just working with and building that relationship between home and school, and we look forward to continuing to improve upon that. So you'll see those numbers, and currently right now our projections, so of that 997, we served 82 in the preschool. In the preschool building, that would have been our ages 3 to 5, and then 915 students from the ages 6 to 21. And so when we had that discussion about the preschool earlier, you can see why there was a need to try to diversify some of those students out and fully include them into all the programs and with other students.
Question.
Yes, sir.
Going back to that number, so the 997, those are individually different students. Are some students qualified in multiple areas and they're served differently, or is it the 997? Does that include, you know, somebody? Is that 997 students, or is that 700 students and 297 have multiple qualifications, or
that's what? A great question. It's 997 students, and so right now early projections are that we're going to be around 850. So we have obviously students who would have moved off of IEPs because they have they've met the standard to be fully included on a regular education plan. We have students who've graduated and or moved, so that's 997 students that came through our district that would have been on an IEP. And that's all the way from, you know, the ID, and I meant to say this, these are all the D's, the N's and D's, the ID, the DD, the BD, the ED, FD, that's all the acronyms we use. We use a lot of them, so I put those in parentheses because there's a lot of acronyms that we use. But yes, 997 students came through. So some of the highlights, and I've just got a couple of slides that I wanted to highlight, some of the great opportunities that we had in this particular past year. And some of this might have been brewing before I came on board, but we take great pride in all the hard work that we have done for our schools and for our students. And so the Parent Advisory Council, on the recommendation of Dr. Boichers when I first came in, that was a high need to be able to provide an outlet or just an opportunity to be visible visible, but also to hear what's going on inside our schools. One of the best places that we can hear that, obviously, is from our parents, because they're either getting the good, the bad, the ugly, but we invited two parents from each school. We also had some at-large community members a part of that. Stacy Callison chaired that for me this particular year, and so we actually started with probably right around 20. It grew there shortly, and then it came off just a little bit. You know, we averaged probably between probably right around 15 each meeting, so it was a really good turnout. And honestly, we informed our parents, and that became a great information session. It did not become a session where of everything Oak Ridge Schools was not doing for their child. It actually became an opportunity to brag about a lot of staff, but then also if there were concerns, we were able to at least take note of that and or address those. But it also became an information session so that we could share each of our service providers. So each meeting we would have 1 to 2 speakers. So we would talk about what OT PT provided, what speech does, what a school psychologist does. Dr. Henderson came to one of our meetings and actually explained what a 504 is, because there's some misinformation about between an IEP and a 504 and the coverage of that. And so that, you know, students ever under a 504 can get accommodations and modifications. So it was an awesome opportunity to be able to be visible, but to also build that relationship with our parents and our staff that got to come and present. Something else I wanted to highlight down there is the second point was the high school work group. Some of you may have heard about this and or possibly even popped in, but we started at Food City, and this is our two classrooms at the high school. And one of the things I wanted to see was our students more visible and actually learning job-specific skills so that they, when they graduate, that they could go out and actually get a job and function and work in our community, obviously. And so we started at Food City. They were great representatives and very encouraging to us, and we were able to take a group of students every Friday to work there. From that, we expanded, after Christmas break, we expanded to the animal shelter down on the east side of town there, and we took some students there and served in that particular environment. We also then moved to TSC, the Tractor Supply Company, and so because we have some students who might have interest in the agriculture world, and so we got to move there. And then the fourth place that we added here right around spring break was the church behind the high school. So not every job required students to have to be transported, because sometimes that may not be available. But also there are opportunities even very close that we can walk to. So it was an awesome opportunity to get those four places in place. And I think that you will see that we're going to be working hard next year to continue to expand that, either number of days, number of students involved, and or number of workplaces that we get involved. So number of students served and referred. There were this year alone, there were 112 students who were referred for special education. 82 of those were retained on an IEP. So those are, again, just the numbers that continue to go up for different reasons. Some of those were already in our district. We identified them through the RTI process or through other means. It might have been a parent referral. Some of those might have been new to our district, but out of 112 that were referred, 82 of those were put on an IEP. We're obviously continuing to work on our processes with inactive files and how to transport files and things like that. You'll be happy to know that there are years and years and years and years of files that had been stored in our schools, and we have now cleaned out all the elementary and middle schools of all the inactive files. And so next year we will take on the lion's share of the high school. And so our schools will be, one, have more availability and space for those students we currently serve, but also the opportunity to remove those inactive files so that nothing can happen to them, and we can safeguard those in our office. So number of students graduating with a regular education diploma, that was just an awesome feat in itself, and kudos to the high school staff, because all those that were not in the CDC class graduated with a regular education diploma this year, and that was something that they were very proud of, and they were so excited because they did not have to order any of the special education diplomas this year. So I thought that was a real big highlight and an attribute to how hard our high school staff is working each and every day. And then scholarships for the CDC students. If you didn't hear about this, the ARC Academy, or the ARC of Oak Ridge, the ARC of Anderson County. They provided scholarships in the past to Anderson County high school students and Clinton high school students. And because of the relationship we forged through the Parent Advisory Council with Dargie and having her a part of this, three of our students actually got crisp $100 bills when they graduated this year. And they had a little, they had a special dinner and ceremony at the community center for them. And I got to go over and give those students $100 bills. And you know how excited anybody would be if they got a crisp $100 bill. So it's exciting where we're moving with our special education. Just some more success stories, and these are just a couple. I had asked staff when I knew that I was going to get the opportunity to share about sending me some stories, some success stories and things like that, and of course they'd come out of the woodwork with different things, but just a couple of them were the two grants from the Education Foundation. Really wanted to highlight that because the Education Foundation is a big part of our schools and where our schools get to go sometimes. And so we were fortunate to get the outdoor classroom, which is the second to last bullet point down there. We were able to get the funding to build an outdoor classroom. So if you go behind Mr. Watterson and Mrs. Leach's classrooms, down there on the backside of the school, you will see a brand new outdoor classroom that was built in conjunction with other students, the CDC students and some parents, and also some community members from Home Depot who came and helped to build that structure. But our students at the high school will be able to take advantage of that. And that was one of the grants. And the other grant was for a Promethean table at Jefferson Middle School. Super excited about that and all the technology that we're getting to continue. Growing and harvesting success at Woodland. This was a garden project that Ms. Sawyer and Ms. Straka took on for students to help with therapy reasons. And it really just highlights getting those students active and getting them dirty and allowing them the opportunity to explore and learn through a garden project. And so Special Olympics, obviously we had two schools that competed and participated, which was an awesome opportunity. And that's one of the pictures that's highlighted there. Scholarships through the Coach Lee Muntz Fund at RMS, three students were provided scholarships for Camp Quantanilla. If you've never attended Camp Quantanilla, it's over towards Crossville. It's on a camp. It's a week-long setting for students who have multiple disabilities, and they're partnered with a one-to-one adult from the University of Tennessee. I was actually a counselor in 2003 for this, and so that's why I could actually say that name. It looks long, and you're like, what? Camp Quantanilla? But it's an awesome opportunity for our students and all students with multiple disabilities to participate, and it's a week-long process that'll just change their lives. Horseback riding, hiking, canoeing, just a lot of games. And it really, if you ever get a chance to go out there, you'll learn a lot about students who we feel like might need our help, who truly are independent even with their disabilities, and it's awesome. Fresh Start program, I just put that down as one of the success stories, even though that's not a special education program that is often running at Linden Elementary School, and it really is a foundational program that is taking some of our students who just aren't ready at the elementary setting to be able to help try to build those foundations so that we can re-enter them back into general ed population and so that we can see them successful, because one of our goals with this program is to prevent them from going to the alternative school, Secret City, you know, down the road. And we're hoping if we can catch them early on and provide the tools and the foundation for them, for these students, and build a good working relationship with our families, we might be on a preventative side as opposed to trying to work on the other end. And my last slide is just in the path forward, and just some things that I wanted to share. You know, as we move forward, there's, you know, lots of great things going on inside of our schools and lots of great things going on inside special ed, and just wanted to highlight a couple of those. But we are moving forward with an ED classroom at JMS, so now that will complement Dr. O'Connor's classroom that's already established at Robertsville. And so we will now have one at Robertsville and Jefferson. So we're super excited about that. That should help with our numbers and cross-boundary applications that everybody wanted to go to Dr. O'Connor's at Robertsville. This should help with our numbers, but also be able to serve those students specifically with emotional disturbances and try to, again, building that foundation so that as we prepare them to move on to the high school, that they have a good solid foundation or available available and able to learn in a regular ed setting. And so progress monitoring and our behavior plans, we're working with PCG, our Easy IEP vendor, and working on streamlining that process and getting better at that process, and also how we communicate with parents when their child is making progress or not making progress, but we're working on that. And that tool, there's a progress monitoring tool that we have purchased, and then a behavior light tool that we have purchased, and it's all on the platform we have existing, so we didn't have to buy any new platforms or anything like that. These were just tools that were added on to that actual platform. And the three things I'll end with, these are three things that you're going to start hearing more about because we are working hard with, I'm working hard with Mr. McDonald on, especially at the high school, but it could expand further. But the occupational courses study, you would have seen in one of your, the TSBA things about the occupational diploma, and that is a real opportunity. And so there is a regular education diploma, there's a special education diploma, and then now there's going to be what's called the occupational diploma. And so these are diplomas that Governor Haslam really was working on making sure that businesses did not overlook, because these diplomas will say when they graduate from our high school that they are really certified, they're capable of going into a job environment, because these students would have already had put in so many hours to be able to get this diploma that they are capable of going out into the work environment. So right now, Mr. McDonald and I, we are working on trying to build an occupational course of study. So as students come to the high school, rather than just placing them necessarily in the CDC classroom, if they couldn't be in inclusion, maybe we can put them on a track to at least graduate with job skills and ready to go into the workforce in our community. Work-based learning opportunities, as I said earlier, was, you know, continuing to grow partnerships in our community. Transportation obviously is our biggest need, and making sure that we can get to and from those, and working out, you know, working around the schedules of the buses and, you know, their special area classes. And then the last one I have on there is service learning opportunities. And this kind of came out of the a conversation with Tennessee Achieves for those students who are trying to get their first 2 years paid for, that we have students who don't know how to go about and volunteering for 8 hours. And to us, 8 hours is nothing. That's sometimes a half a day of work for us, a full day for most days, but providing opportunities that are already spelled out, but more specifically for those students with disabilities. And this is something that the Parent Advisory Council is real excited about doing, and getting partnered in our community, is providing their students an opportunity to give back to the community that gives so much to them. So we're really looking forward to that. So that's my presentation on special education. Again, I've been super excited about I've almost been here one complete year. I leave Saturday for Japan on that special trip, looking forward to that. But we continue to work hard to provide the services that we need to for our students and our staff, and continue to grow what we do for our community and for our students. So with that, if there's any questions, I'll be glad to take those.
Questions or comments? Ms. Eagle.
First, I'm tickled to hear about your program to have students out working in the community and taking them to various businesses. That is fabulous. The federal government has just changed the rules so that now facilities such as Emory Valley Center are no longer allowed to have a sheltered workshop or just a day program. They have to funnel everybody into a work somewhere in the community. So for us to go ahead and get started is going to make that much, much easier. Just one question. Do we have any special training for all regular ed teachers? Because some of our students with an IEP come in with a disability that they may not understand, may not have ever heard of it. And I will occasionally hear from parents, my kid's teacher just doesn't follow the IEP. And I know that they have to. I know that they're supposed to. And I know that no parent wants to be the one that keeps going back and badgering. And I think part of it may be if the teacher doesn't understand the nature of the disability, they may not understand the why behind these requirements. Can you tell us a little bit about what instruction our teachers get
Yeah, and that's a great question. And one of the things that I really highlighted with our staff is, especially with special area teachers, art, music, how do you adapt that to certain students, but obviously even for our core classes. So our staff are working on Wednesdays. Obviously, they use those days, but I've been called in several times to work with administrators or teachers if there are questions about specific type disabilities or accommodations that are needed. This is an area that we continue to try to improve upon, but we are working on trying to make sure that we are providing the training, especially for our regular ed staff, because I feel like that our special ed staff, you know, they probably have experiences working with this population. But even for, say, the restraint training, the therapeutic crisis intervention, the TCI, you know, our special ed staff, you know, a lot of them are trained, but we're trying to work on de-escalation with our regular ed staff, because obviously hands-on is the last thing we want to do. That should be the last piece that we ever try to do, is put our hands on a child. But unfortunately, in unsafe situations, that might be, you know, we may have to. But how do we de-escalate that before we ever get to that point? And so sometimes we have to talk with regular ed teachers, and then they're very interested in the de-escalation strategies, because I feel like that behaviors are probably one of the areas that I get the most questions on. And I'm working with administrators on, you know, what would that look like in their school or in their classroom? Because I feel like that if I start with the administrator, then you know, they're the culture, they're the climate for the rest of their school. So if I'm able to start with the administrator, we're able to have a really good discussion. And I have been pulled into several of those meetings. But we need to continue on that pathway. And so even on July 25th, we will provide even more opportunities. We have several of the special ed staff who will provide opportunities on how to work with, you know, emotionally disturbed type students or gifted students, or you know, how to, you know, make some accommodations, modifications, and I think the PD plan that's been laid out both for July and January, because we were able to present it January, and this wasn't just our staff. We had Ridgeview participate, we had Kingston Academy participate. So I think we're reaching out to even some of our other contractors or businesses to help us to meet the needs of our students. And now it really is just getting those teachers to participate and to get them involved.
Anyone else? Thank you very much. Thanks, for pulling this together, and thank you for helping make a difference in what we do in Oak Ridge Schools. We appreciate that. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, next under items for information, the Rotary Club of Oak Ridge Sunsets. Is that right? Yeah, that's right. Am I saying that right? Okay, the Rotary Club of Oak Ridge Sunsets Da Vinci Arts and Science Fair. Dr. Borchers.
It's much easier to say the Rotary Club of Oak Ridge, which I happen to be a member of, Jim. But I want to recruit you, Dr. Oh,
there
you, and we have Breakfast Rotarian over here to my right, Dr. Beckendorf. But Jim, this is a wonderful presentation. We had to move you to the end of the agenda, so I'm gonna have you share why we had to move you to the end of the agenda.
Okay, well, the reason that you had to move me to the end of the agenda, I'm being inducted into the Oak Ridge Rotary Club of Oak Ridge Sunsets Club as the president-elect. So that's why. And you're right, it is a mouthful when you let it roll off like that. I really do appreciate you all allowing me to come here and just introduce this video clip. I think Lynn has it queued up. We were really fortunate again this year to work with arts and sciences. When you walk into this room, you can't, you know, fail to see all the important arts projects that are on the walls down the hallway in our school administration building and behind the screen up there. If you go to the city hall, the municipal building is filled with artwork as well. So this is a city that's not just founded in science, but it has a strong art background. So when I was a member, or when I became a member of the Sunset Rotary Club, I decided we're going to bring a little bit of art into this. Now, Roger Ward started this science fair about 7 years ago, and I think you all know who Roger is. We started that at Linden, but it grew so big that we had to move that out of Linden to the New Hope Center. So the last several years, we've been working at the New Hope Center in showcasing arts and sciences. Thus, we coined the name the Da Vinci Arts and Science Fair. So this year and last year, we had an opportunity to work with our local filmmaker, Keith McDaniel, and I think all of you know who he is. He actually put together this for no charge at all, this video that's going to showcase in about 6 or 7 minutes what we actually have happened at the Da Vinci Arts and Science Fair this last year.
Well, the Da Vinci Arts and Science Fair is actually in its second year for the third, fourth, and fifth graders. And the reason it's the Da Vinci Arts and Science Fair is we wanted to build on some of the successes that we had in the science fair and include the visual art aspect, because Leonardo da Vinci was prolific in visual art as well as sciences, and we wanted to show the relationship between the two disciplines.
Well, we want to make sure that we encourage them at a young age to be involved. As a country, we've kind of fallen back in terms of promoting math and science, and so we want to do our part to make sure that for the next generation, we're encouraging them and we're giving them an opportunity to be exposed to some things that maybe they're not necessarily having an opportunity to do at school or at home.
But this science fair gives each one of them as individuals a chance to delve into something that's exciting for them. They learn new things. Now, having it here in the New Hope Center is exciting for us at Y-12 because it brings the community in. They're walking through the History Center. They're enjoying their time here. But the basic reason for the Rotary to sponsor it and for Y-12 to be a part of it is to give these kids a chance to learn something new that they can apply for the rest of their life.
My project is about, people being cautious about how much sugar and salt they're consuming into their bodies, and my idea was color the salt and sugar so they can be more cautious about how much they're using in their everyday life. So I got mashed potatoes, put some salt on the mashed potatoes so they can see how much salt is on there. My grandfather, he has a lot of, he drinks a lot of coffee, and I don't really think he knows how much he's using for sugar in his coffee. And my grandmother, she loves beans, and I don't really think she knows how much salt she's using.
I love drawing, and I like getting new art supplies and trying them out. We were watching Beauty and the Beast, and I thought, well, I wonder if I could draw the rose. So I started to sketch it out and got my design. And once I did, I got oil pastels and colored it and saw how it looked, and I liked it.
I did a platform that's called Plumeria, and I cut it. And I was going to see if they grew back. Most of them did, and some did not. I looked up on the internet about what stem cells were like, and stem cells are any kind of that can turn into any kind of cell. I figured out that stem cells are in planarium, and that's how they grow back.
Well, I did an art piece called Life of a Monarch. It shows all the different forms of a monarch butterfly. So it shows first what the monarch butterfly eats, the milkweed plant, and then it has chrysalis. And it shows how the butterfly comes out of the chrysalis and how it forms. It also has a very big butterfly that will pop up. Well, I did a photograph, and I used a Holden camera, which uses film. You have to advance it to do another photo. So what I did was a double exposure where I take two photos and it goes into the same picture.
As a judge, we get to go around and just judge all the different projects based on creativity, originality, the research provided that they have. And it's very interesting getting to interact with all these kids because, a lot of the time you forget that they're only fourth graders just because of the amount of knowledge that they have. And it's really impressive because when we ask, did your parents help at all with this or not? Just their response is oh yeah, they help take pictures and they help a little bit with my spelling here and there. And just I know my friend Lucas and I, we're both judging together, and we've been blown away by some of these projects.
As a judge, you see a large variety of subjects, but it's really impressive to see kind of in their experimental design how they set it up and control for variables and stuff like that. One of the most impressive parts, I think, one of the most important parts, really.
anytime you have an opportunity for the kids to show off what they're doing, it not only builds confidence in them and a sense of pride and a sense of, this is something that I could probably do as a career one day, but it also educates the public. One of the things that we think is really important is for those people who are going to see this exhibition, and that's the reason we have exhibitions, is for them to be educated and learn about the importance of science education and also the importance of arts education and how the two cooperate. So that's the reason we have this exhibition every year. And I think the Rotary Club serves our community really well by having both exhibitions together.
So to follow up, not only are these kids showing off what they're doing in arts and sciences, but they also walk away with some, and I remember the $100 bill that you were talking about, the top winner in science, Microsoft Office Surface Pro, iPad for the top winner in the arts competition, and a lot of other things that were awarded that day for all these students. And it gave us an opportunity to show off what we're doing in our schools. And that's one of the things I'm going to go ahead and say. Next year's my 30th year as a school teacher in the Oak Ridge schools, and I haven't found another school system that I know of that supports the arts and sciences and the total education of our kids like the Oak Ridge schools do. So you all should be congratulated for that. Thank you very much.
Before you sit down, how are you using this video, or how is it being used?
I just came away from a meeting. We're going to be actually using that in one of the competitions that Rotary Club does. I think they have a conference in Chattanooga that we'll be showing this off. So we'll be representing not just our Rotary Club, but also the Oak Ridge City Schools. So that's the way we've used it in the past. In fact, we just recently won an award for our work with the Da Vinci Arts and Sciences Fair.
Questions or comments from board members? Yes, awesome. Great. Thank you,
Tim. I just want to thank Jim. I think everybody here knows just the high-quality educator he is, and I think this is another example of when you get a teacher like Jim and you give students opportunities to create things like this, what they can do with it, and also highlighting his service to the community. So I just a shout-out to Jim. So thank you, Jim.
Thank you all very much.
And he can continue to serve in other ways.
Thank you. Next, under items for information, is the 2016-17 Board of Education calendar. Obviously, and I guess we say this every year, this is the calendar subject to change.
Yeah, just yes. A quick question. I'm noticing that October 31st is listed on the calendar. How does trick-or-treat work when it falls on a weeknight?
It's still trick-or-treat. Even on a Monday.
Is that a good idea then? I'm thinking not. And I believe the 24th, the previous Monday, we should be back from fall break, right? Sorry, just that feels like a bad idea. So.
Well, so you're going to take away the opportunity for the board to dress up on that night. Is that what you want
to
do?
We can still dress up, Keys. I'm just thinking that the entertainment that we normally enjoy will have other things to do evening.
Yeah, no, that's, you want to look into that?
I believe I'm looking at the calendar here. That is the lead conference with most of your administrators not in district.
On the 24th?
On the 24th. And I think that's why, but I don't disagree that the 31st causes some.
Are we wedded to Monday night? Or anyway, can we find a solution, I guess? Yeah.
We can come back. Lynn and I will discuss and then get back with the board.
And to answer your question, we've had meetings before that are not on Monday nights. So
just maybe just once.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's a good idea. Thank you for
coming. Can I also make a suggestion? And since we are now in the technology world with our computers and stuff like that, and maybe we already do, can we like put this in an Outlook calendar? And all right.
It's already there. Thank you. Even I need that. How'd that happen? Okay. But I don't know how to get back to my next screen. So, okay, next item under items for information, 2015-16 requested but not required fee payment percentages. And you have a handout that identifies that information. Questions from anyone? Dr. Borscher's comments?
In addition to that handout that the board has in front of them, just to make sure you've seen the attachment on the agenda that gives some percentages by building.
Yeah, I think what we were talking about earlier, it'd be nice to see how that's trended over the last few years, if we can do that.
Yeah, we'll work and see if we can get you more information on that, but it is clear that we are using more funding basically to pay for student fees that are not being paid at the school level. And just for your information, we actually have $62,000 in that account. As you can see, we basically spent right at $60,000 this year. I will tell you that's a little bit misleading because the BizTown field trip is a very expensive trip. Both middle schools were just lacking the financial support to make that trip, and to put the full cost on the students was just something we did not feel good about doing. So we did spend about $6,000 out of that account to fund the BizTown trip at the end of the year for the two fifth grades at the two middle schools. So we actually spent less money in that account than what it would appear. So.
Other questions or comments? Next then is the enrollment report. Any questions or comments? Financial report.
Just one question as we come down to the end of the fiscal year, how we feel?
This report in front of you is through May, so as far as looking at it, we have 92% revenues received and 82% expenditures out. So we're in good shape that way. The property tax, we've met our budget already in May for that. Sales tax is lagging a little bit. So June will be interesting. I don't have any concerns or worries, I'll say that. We'll be fine.
Other questions? Items for discussion? There are none. Old business? There is none. New business? There is none. Communications? As we reach the month of July, we do not meet. Board does not meet in the month of July. So our next regular scheduled board meeting would be August the 1st, and we have two board meetings that month. And any comments or questions from the board? Hearing none, thank you each of you for attending tonight. We are adjourned.